Many years ago, we were told to simplify our lives. I don't know how many of you remember that. I do. Mr. Armstrong had asked us to make changes in our lives. He wanted us to look at how we were in debt, how we would we should be working towards a debt-free life, because it doesn't take much when we read the Bible to look into the future. That's what the Bible tells us about what is going to lie ahead of us. And we were told this because the future, as we read, is going to be difficult. It's not going to be easy to survive. And that we should be making changes in our life, in our lifestyles. But very few people made those changes. They started out, it's easy to start out looking at yourself, realizing that this needs to be done, that needs to be done in my life. And as we start out, we get excited about it. We start making the changes, but over a period of time, we lapse back into the lifestyles that we lived. We should be thinking about our lives today more so now than we were back in those days. And we're familiar with what Paul told Timothy about the days that were ahead of us. He said they're going to be perilous. And when you look at that word perilous, it means these are going to be very stressful and very trying times. The days that are coming ahead of us today, we can look forward to a time when we will not have all the things in life that we have now. I just saw something on the news about President Biden making more changes in our homes. You know, they're trying to get rid of all gas-burning appliances that we have in our homes. So we can see into the future a little bit that things are going to be difficult. And some people, they become very content with the physical, material things in life that they have obtained over the years. But people have become very content with having all of these luxuries. And we find that instead of a more simplified life, life is becoming more complicated and it's becoming more confusing. And even though we have some become so accustomed to these things, you know, life may be being easier for us, but it's going to be more difficult in the days to come. And there are those people today that are rejecting all of this lifestyle that we have today. They live off the grid and they look to do this so that they can find contentment in life. That's what they're looking for. And then there are those people that go in the other direction. One goes off one extreme. Other people go off the other extreme of just buying everything that comes into sight, you might say, to look for a life that they want to have where they are contented. But do these extremes bring contentment to people in their lives? We just came back from the upper part of Michigan. and they have the Amish communities up there. And they have their horses and wagons, buggies, no electrical lines going into a home. You see a big house and no electrical lines, and so you know that an Amish family lives there. And they look. They keep looking for contentment. And people go to extremes. But do these extremes bring any contentment in people's lives? Well, the answer certainly is no. And it's easy for us to get caught up in the cares of life that we forget where contentment really comes from. We get caught up in this world's view of things, of bigger, better, more. And we never have enough. It just seems that people never have enough. Turn to Proverbs 27. Proverbs, the 27th proverb. Because here we read in verse 20, Proverbs 27, verse 20. It says, hell and destruction are never full. So the eyes of man are never satisfied. We never have enough. We never have enough to fill our lives. And advertisers reminds us of that constantly on television, radio, wherever, billboards. We always want more and more. And it's hard to step down from a lifestyle that we have fallen into, that we like, we're comfortable with. And it's hard to come down from that. Because it's not normal for people to want to step down in life. And that's what we were asked to do back then. Because once a level of living is obtained, it's just something that we don't want to give up. And people will go to great lengths and go into debt to maintain a standard of living. Today I want to ask a question. What is contentment and how can we find it in our lives? You know, if you were to walk out here on the streets and just walk up to an individual and ask them, are you contented in life? I think you'd find very, very few people that are contented. I remember the old advertisement years and years ago about carnation milk. It comes from contented cows. I think you all remember that. And then I saw a Far Side cartoon of all these cows. And one of them sitting at the table and he looks at them and says, I'm not contented. Well, if you're looking for a dictionary meaning, it says that contentment is a state of happiness and being satisfied, happy with what one has or is. But you know, in the book of Luke, God gives us a definition of being contented. So turn to Luke chapter 12. Luke chapter 12. And we'll read starting in verse 15. No, No, let's see. I'm in Luke 12, verse 15, if I can get there. And he said to them, take heed and beware of covetousness. For one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things that he possesses. Then he spoke a parable to them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops? So he said, I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there I will store all my crops and all my goods, and I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, you fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided? So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. Here was a man, had all of these wealthy needs, all of his needs. It says his barns were full. His life was full. And he's wanting to look forward and he wants to build bigger and better. And in life, isn't that basically what people do? They want better. They want more. And so they set out to obtain all of these material things. But it only takes one night, as he says here, and you die. And you can't take it with you. All of the things that we gather in life has to be left behind. I was talking to someone the other day, not even in the church, just somebody I was working with. And I says, when I die, I want a penny put in my coffin. I will take at least a penny with me. I can't take the rest of it, but I can take the penny. But we see that contentment doesn't come in the form of material things. It doesn't come with the abundance of things that man accumulates in life. It has to come from some other place. And that some other place is with God. We live in an age today where it is almost a foregone conclusion that we are going to seek wealth, try to get rich. I was wondering, how many millionaires do we have right here in the state of Arkansas? 51,000 plus. Nationally, 22 million people are millionaires. To me, it seems, though, that the most contented people that I've run across in life happen to be some of the poorest. I've known a lot of poor people, and they seem to be the happiest people that there are. But so much of the contentment that people have really is based upon what they have as opposed to what their neighbor has. And sometimes it's easy to look at what you have and then covet what is your neighbor. And God tells us, as we just read, that we should not covet after others and what they have. Sometimes people have this complex of keeping up with the Joneses. You know, you said that was an old saying, we'd say, keeping up with the Joneses. I don't know who the Joneses were of that period of time, but it's always that we're trying to keep up with someone else. And I've experienced a good example of this a few years ago. I won't mention names, I won't mention the town, but there is a town in South Arkansas. I was asked to go with a man. I'd retired from Diebold, and he called me up, and he asked me to go with him to look at this house that they wanted to put a vault, like you have in the bank, a big vault, in this house. And they were having problems. The contractor poured a 24-inch wall when it should have been a 12-inch wall. And so we went to this man's house, and the building contractor was there. And this house that was being built by this man, he had a brother that had just built him a house. And the house that the brother had built was over 20,000 square feet. But this man waited until his brother built his house so he could build a bigger one. And he had right at 26,000 square feet, $28 million. All because the brother built a big house. He had to have one bigger and greater. It's futile to pursue material things and leave God out of our lives. That's just what we've read here in this parable. Our contentment is found in God and His way of life. In 1 Timothy, let's look at 1 Timothy 6. 1 Timothy chapter 6. And we'll begin in verse 5. We'll break into the middle of what Paul is saying here. It says, useless wranglings of men of corrupt minds and destitute of the truth, who suppose that godliness is a means of gain. From such withdraw yourself. You want to find something interesting? Google up the richest preachers in the world. And they'll give you, I read this list of this top 20. And number 20 was worth $5 million. You wouldn't even begin to guess what number one was. $1.1 billion. That's a preacher, supposedly preaching the truth. But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food, clothing, with these we shall be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and snares, into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drove men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. You know, was it yesterday, day before yesterday, I think it was, they announced on the news the winner of the lottery. Someone won $1 billion. That person lives in some of the poorest parts of Los Angeles. So it tells you he's not a rich person. He's a poor person. And he is going to have in his hands $1 billion in a few days. That man's life is going to change. And he thinks that all this money, all this wealth, is going to settle all of his problems in life. And it's not. This man thinks he will be content for the rest of his life, but his life is not going to be one of contentment. We can't go after the materialistic things of this world and try to serve God at the same time and still find contentment. Turn to Philippians while we're here. Just a few pages back towards the front of the Bible. Philippians 4. Philippians 4, verse 11, and we'll read through verse 13. Now that I speak in regards to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ which strengthens me. The Apostle Paul. He was a man, apparently, in his earlier days, he had money. He had more than the average person. Because he went to these schools, he was schooled in the Pharisees' way of thought. And when God called him, Paul suffered greatly in life. And that's the reason he's able to say, if it's in good times, I know what it's like. But he says, you know, in bad times, I know what it's like. And I can be content. Can we say that? Can we say that whatever state that we're in, that we are content? Contentment is something that is learned. It's not natural to man to be that way. When we learn to value God more than the created things, we will find contentment in our lives. A contentment, really, that we've never known before, no doubt. At an early time in Paul's life, he was not a man that wanted and needed. Let's look at some of the ways that we can learn to be contented in our lives, brethren. Number one, don't live your life in a fantasy world. We have to be realistic about life. We have to learn to live in the present. You know, I mentioned that man that won all of that money. He's going to, in his mind, he will develop a world that he would like to live. But we have to be realistic about what goes on in our lives, what goes on around us. And we need to establish a reasonable standard of living. You know, we live in a world today where virtually every adult, I'll put it that way, every adult has a credit card. And, you know, sometimes people possess several credit cards. I've seen people open up their billfold, and it's like you're playing poker. The cards just keep coming out. And they'll look at this one, oh, this is this bank, or this one, oh, that's not the bank I want. Everybody seems to have these cards. And everybody is in debt with them. Very few people have learned you got to pay these things off every month. Because they will tell you on there, if you make the minimum payment, this is how long it's going to take you. And some of those dates, they're years to pay it off. You know, watching TV, it's a constant stream of high-pressure advertising telling us that we need the latest and the greatest gadgets. We can buy now, and we've got a whole month before we have to pay anything. And you don't even have to pay it off then. Let's turn to 1 Chronicles. 1 Chronicles, chapter 29. 1 Chronicles 29 and verse 12. It says here, both riches and honor comes from you, God. That's where it comes from. God has given every one of us. He's given us a place in life. There used to be this old song. I don't know who sung it. So many different people sung it. From rags to riches. And God has placed us somewhere in that level of from being rags on the bottom to riches on the top. Somewhere in life we fit into that. And whatever level God has placed us, we should be living within that level. To be content, we have to live where God has placed us in life. Number two, to be content, to learn contentment in life, we must learn to be a giver. The natural tendency is to be a taker, not a giver. Proverbs. Let's turn to Proverbs 11. Because here, Proverbs 11. And verse 24. Solomon says here, there is one who scatters, yet increases more. And there is one who withholds more than is right, but it leads to poverty. You know, it doesn't make sense today. That Proverbs right there does not make sense to people. But if you live it, it makes all the sense in the world. Give away what you have and you will have more. Money. Money is a very deceitful commodity. You know, we can't hide behind wealth. Money, money just won't protect us. I'll put it that way. It can buy a lot of things. But in the end, it can't buy you your life. Just up on the north end of town here used to be a Walmart store there. Now it's something, all these stores now, because Walmart moved across the freeway. And I went into Walmart, that store up here in north of town one day, and who was standing there right inside the door where you come in? Sam Walton. And he's shaking hands with everybody. He's smiling. One of the richest men in this country at that time. And he died of cancer. All of that money he had. And he couldn't take it with him, and it wouldn't save him. Our first obligation with our wealth that we obtain in this life, whatever it might be, our first obligation is that we give to God what is His. We've heard Malachi 3:8 so many times we won't turn there, but it says, will a man rob God? And people do rob God by not giving to Him what is His. Because if we begrudgingly give to God, won't we be that way to our fellow human being, man? We would. We would treat our fellow man the way we would treat God. God says He loves a cheerful giver. You know, in any group of people, you have those that are the givers. You have those that are the takers. There's a rule in business. It's the 80-20 rule. And what this rule says, that 20% of the people will do 80% of the work. 80% of the people will do 20% of the work. And it applies to almost everything in life. In a group of people, 20% of the people will give 80%. And 80% of the people will give 20%. It just works that way. It's been proven. Some give much and some give little. Acts 20. In Acts 20, in verse 35, Acts 20 and verse 35, I have shown you in every way by laboring like this that you must support the weak. And remember the words of the Lord Jesus that he said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. Christ himself said those words. You won't find it in the four Gospels, but here he says that Christ said that, so I believe it. That it is more blessed to give than to receive. The third point is being grateful for what you have. You know, it's easy for us to focus our minds on the things that we don't have. But just stop and think about what we do have in life. One of the most prominent sins is that of not being thankful. You know, just look around us. What is it in this country that we cannot have? All you got to do is go to the store and you can buy it. But what we don't have, that seems to be what we think about. The things I don't have. I want this. I want that. You know, the vast majority of people will go through their entire life never having what we throw in the garbage. I don't know if you ever think about that in people, this world. I read one time where in this country, right here, we throw in the garbage over 50% of the food that we take into our homes. We throw away so much in this country. That could save the lives of so many people. They would love to have your garbage can. That's a sad thought to think about. And we take for granted all of these blessings that we have. You know, every time we get on our knees, there should be a thankful prayer go up to God, thanking him for what he has given us and all of the things that we have in life. You know, the old song, Count Your Many Blessings. Try that sometime. Try it. I mean, it's just one leads into a dozen more. And every one of them it brings to mind others. We have been so blessed, and are we thankful for it? First Timothy 6. We were here earlier. First Timothy 6:7. Yeah, we read this, but I'll read it again because it says in verse 7, "For we brought nothing into this world, and it's certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and clothing, with these we shall be content." Right now, our refrigerator, you open the door, there's no room to put anything in it. We have so much. We go buy something from the store that has to go into the freezer, and it's a job to try to get it pushed into the freezer. And do we ever stop and think how much we have? Material things do not bring contentment. Contentment comes from inside, from a thankful heart. Luke 17. In the book of Luke, chapter 17 is a good example of those that were and were not thankful. Luke 17, verse 12. It says, "Then as he entered a certain village, there met him 10 men who were lepers, who stood afar off." A leper was not allowed to be within a certain distance of anyone else. "And they lifted up their voices and said, 'Jesus, Master, have mercy on us.' So when he saw them, he said to them, 'Go show yourselves to the priests.' And so it was that as they went, they were cleansed. Now one of them, when he saw that he was healed, returned and with a loud voice glorified God and fell down on his face at his feet, giving him thanks. And he was a Samaritan. And Jesus answered and said, 'Were there not 10 cleansed? But where are the 9? Were they not any found who returned to give glory to God except this foreigner?' And he said to them, 'Arise, go your way, your faith has made you well.'" That's a lesson, brethren, for all of us today. God has done so much for us. And how little do we thank him? Very few people are thankful in this day and age. Number 4, appreciate the little things in life. You know, every day we wake up to a different world. And we find that there are all kinds of things that have the potential to make that day a horrible day. It's there. But there is also a world of little things that get us through all of those days that we would say were horrible days. You know, we can focus on the bad, or we can focus on those little things that get us through the day. And if we focus on those things that are bad, we're not going to be contented. We will not find contentment in that day. A smile or a thank you. There's so little. And yet how many people thank other people for little things they do? I drive through McDonald's from time to time. And when they take my order, I always say thank you to them. When I get up and I pay them, to the window I pay them, I say thank you again. It doesn't take much, brethren, to do little things for people that will help them with their day. How many times have you opened the door for someone? And they just walk right by you. Never even smile at you. Never say thank you or nothing. You know, that was your job. No, it wasn't. I'm going in the store and you're coming out. I open the door. I ask you to come first. Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6. And verse 26. It says, look at the birds of the air. For they neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns, yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not of more value than they? Here's a little bird. And we have more value than that. God is aware of the little things. And we too should be aware of little things in our lives. It's the little things that make up our lives. It's the little things that bring happiness and contentment to life. So we need to find the little things in our life that brings us joy, brings us contentment. Number 5. Don't compare yourselves with others. This is just going to rob you of the contentment in life. Because God did not make us all the same. We're all different. We're not a bunch of yellow pencils. We're different. And if we try to compare ourselves with others, then we're setting ourselves up to follow down a road that we really don't want to go down. There's just too many variables in life to compare yourself with someone else. You are you. You're not somebody else. You're you. And comparisons are never fair. They're not. We are all working on ourselves to become like the only one that we should be comparing ourselves to. And we find that in the book of Ephesians. Let's turn to Ephesians chapter 4. In the book of Ephesians, chapter 4. And verse 13. Till we all come to the unity of the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God, to the perfect man, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. Now, if you want to compare yourself with someone, that's who we compare ourselves with. We compare ourselves with Jesus Christ and no one else. And we know how we measure up to Him, don't we? Every year before the Passover, we're asked to examine ourselves and to think about our lives and how we measure up to Christ. Keep looking over my shoulder here. Forgot to bring my timer. Because when we compare ourselves with others, there's a lot to lose, not a lot to gain by it. Either we will take the self-righteous approach of how good I am, or we will take the side where we look at our bad faults. And either way, it's a losing proposition, brethren. We don't want to compare others. It'll only take away from us our peace of mind and our contentment. Number 6, don't let anxiety take over your life. Don't worry, Christ says, about tomorrow. There's enough in tomorrow to take care of itself. How much of our day is filled with worrying about things? Anxiety is a fear that we have down inside of us that disrupts our peace and security. It's the opposite of contentment. Philippians, while we're here, just one more book over in Philippians chapter 4, verse 6. It says here, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication and with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. Let's look at Matthew 6. Matthew chapter 6. And verse 25. Matthew 6, 25. Christ says here, therefore I say to you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or what you will drink, nor about your body, what you will put on it. Is not life more than food and the body more than clothing? Quit worrying, brethren. We need to stop that. It takes contentment away from us. We have to have faith. And God never intended us to live a life that's filled with anxiety. That was not the way He created man. That's not the purpose for creating man. Number 7. one of the most important ones of all. Determined to have a close relationship with God. If we don't have that relationship with God, we're not going to find contentment in life. Let's turn to Isaiah 55. Isaiah 55. Verse 6. Isaiah 55, verse 6. Here it says, "Seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near." You know, there's going to come a time when God is not going to be found by people. That great tribulation is going to come upon mankind. Verse 7, "Let the wicked forsake his ways and the unrighteous man his thoughts. Let him return to the Lord, and he will have mercy on him, and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon." God can be found if we seek him. God is near to those that seek him. But there's coming a time when he's going to turn his back on man. Man has turned his back on God. God will do it to man. And we want to have a close relationship by listening to him and talking to him and listening to what he has to say to us. Psalms 119. This is a psalm that we read a lot. We mention it a lot. In Psalms 119 and 165, I'm sure that many of you get this underlined in your Bible and highlighted. It says, great peace have those who love your law, and nothing causes them to stumble. Great peace, contentment comes from God. Psalms 36. Psalms 36, verse 8. "They are abundantly satisfied with the fullness of your house, and you give them drink from the river of pleasure. For with you is the fountain of life. In your light we see light." Brethren, contentment. All of the physical, material things that we can put into our life is not going to bring it. It's not there. I want to close by looking at Hebrews, the 13th chapter. We'll close with this, because here in Hebrews 13, we read in verse 5. Hebrews 13 and verse 5. "Let your conduct be without covetousness." Here we go back to that word. "Let your conduct be without covetousness, and be content with such things as you have. For he himself has said, 'I will never leave you nor forsake you.'" Brethren, it's all in our attitude towards God. It's an attitude of the heart. Contentment will not be found out here as we go looking into this world. It won't be there. And once the attitude has been, you might say, set on having a close relationship with God, that's when we're going to find contentment. It's there is where all of our needs come from. All we have to do is trust God and have faith in His Word that He has spoken to us. Contentment. Something that we all want, we can all have it. But it has to come from God.